Okay, so are you ready to go on a little adventure with me today?
Always up for an adventure.
All right, excellent. The Church of Tinkerbell podcast.
Faith, imagination, the power of belief.
Love and acceptance to make the world a better place.
What would happen if we all just tried to see the world through the eyes of a child again, even for a moment?
It's a beautiful thought, isn't it?
It is.
The Church of Tinkerbell.
The Church of Tinkerbell. All right, I'm intrigued.
Okay, let's unpack this. We are jumping straight into a deep dive today. And we're sourcing our insights from a place you might not expect.
Mm-hmm.
It's the philosophical writings of the Church of Tinkerbell.
Right, and before you sort of picture, you know, fairy dust, their themes are actually quite profound.
They are. Radical kindness, whimsy, glitter love, laugh, question. It's quite a mix.
It really is.
And we're focusing today on just one specific idea pulled from their audio blog section.
A really intriguing one.
They call it the silence between notes.
And this isn't just like an artistic observation about music theory, is it?
No, not at all. Our mission here is to understand how this idea challenges how we perceive value itself.
Right, because when we listen to music, we focus on the sound, obviously.
Yeah, the notes, the melody.
But this source argues that the real architecture, the structural integrity of it all, lies in the absence of sound.
And that's the hook, isn't it? That central question.
Yeah.
We usually treat silence as just blank space.
Empty, yeah. The bit that happens when the music stops.
But they're saying silence isn't emptiness. It's not absence.
It's a presence of its own.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, the source frames it as a necessary counterweight. It's what stops a beautiful melody just collapsing into, well, a wall of noise.
Gives it shape.
Exactly, structure and shape. Without those rests, those pauses, the notes would just be meaningless chaos.
Think about that for a second, you know. When a musician performs a rest, sometimes that's the most dramatic part.
Oh, absolutely. It builds tension, or it signals a change is coming.
But calling it architecture, that's the bit I find challenging. Architecture feels solid, physical. Silence is intangible.
Right. How can an absence be a building block? That's the core of it.
Yeah.
What's fascinating here is that they define this architecture not by what it is intrinsically, but by what it allows. Silence is defined as possibility.
Possibility.
Okay. And the invisible canvas on which sound is painted.
Ah, okay. I like that. The invisible canvas.
Yeah. And the reason it gets called architecture is because it's the hidden framework of rhythm and meaning.
So like the space between beams in a building, you don't see the air. But without it?
It's just a solid block. Useless. The space is crucial for the structure to be a structure.
That makes the point feel less, I don't know, poetic maybe. And more foundational.
It is foundational.
So if silence is the structure, then constantly filling it, we're actually destroying the framework.
Precisely. You're undermining the very thing that gives the sounds meaning.
Wow.
And this is where they really push it, you know? Beyond just music, into the transcendental.
Transcendental, how so?
They claim that if we really tune in, silence itself can become a kind of music.
A music without instrument, without voices.
Exactly, a form of music that does not require instruments or voices at all.
It's like the constant unheard background hum of existence.
And that hum makes the momentary sounds of life meaningful. Is that the idea?
That's the idea. It's the backdrop that allows the foreground to stand out. Okay, so if music needs this hidden architecture, this silence, why are we so determined to fill every single gap in our own lives?
And that's the pivot, isn't it?
Yeah, here's where it gets really interesting.
Moving from music theory to, well, life coaching almost, this idea of silence as teacher.
The wisdom of stopping.
Yes, and this is where the concept feels genuinely revolutionary, especially today.
Because we live in a world that just demands constant noise, constant productivity.
Absolutely. We fetishize output. Our worth often feels measured by, you know, email sent, tasks completed.
Credits received, steps taken.
There's a real anxiety around not doing something, around being unproductive.
Right. If you stop moving, stop talking, stop producing, it feels like you're failing or falling behind.
Weakness, even.
Yeah. Stopping can feel like weakness.
And the material tackles this directly. It talks about the simple courage just to pause, to intentionally stop.
And calls that revolutionary.
Mm-hmm.
Just pausing.
Downright revolutionary, because it goes against that relentless drive. The wisdom it offers is that we can't really hear the truth
of a situation, or ourselves.
Both. Yeah. We can't hear it without creating a vacuum for it. Stopping forces us to slow down, to listen to what stirs within.
So the silence becomes almost a moral act, a kind of resistance.
A resistance against the machine of constant motion, yeah.
But, okay, how do we actually use that silence? It's one thing to stop, but another to stop. Productively, I guess. Is that the right word?
Well, productively might be the trap we're trying to escape, but I get what you mean. How does it yield something?
Yeah.
That's where the song analogy comes back in.
Okay.
If you rush a song, it loses its shape.
Yeah. Right?
Its impact.
Totally.
Well, the argument is life rush loses its meaning. Meaning needs space. It needs a fallow period to develop.
Ah, like letting land rest.
Exactly. Insight doesn't usually happen during the frantic rush. Meaning ripens in silence. You need that quiet processing time for an experience or a thought to mature into wisdom.
That's a really important distinction.
Yeah.
Silence isn't just taking a break from meaning making.
No.
It's an active ingredient in the process.
It absolutely is. It's the difference between just hearing a single note, maybe, and hearing the whole chord resonate.
Noise versus resonance.
That's a good way to put it. The intentional rest lets the sound that came before really sink in, feel complete, both for us individually.
And they argue for the collective, too.
And for the collective, yes.
Which brings us to the next part. Because individual reflection, okay, I get that. But the source talks quite a bit about the space that holds us.
Mm.
Arguing that silence isn't just personal absence, but a kind of collective holding. What does that mean?
Well, think about shared silence. It can be incredibly powerful and maybe a bit vulnerable.
Vulnerable? How?
It's a collective agreement, isn't it? To wait together, mm-hmm. or to anticipate something together, or just process something heavy together without words.
Okay.
And they use two really vivid musical examples here. The first one is the string quartet.
Right, detail that one, because it suggests the players are somehow leaning on the absence itself.
That's exactly the point. The musicians connect not just through playing the same notes at the same time.
But through the shared silence.
Through the shared silence, a rest is described as a collective inhalation.
Collective inhalation.
Wow, a moment where the players and even the listeners are bound together by this shared anticipation. Everyone's holding their breath, metaphorically.
Connected by knowing what's coming next. Or not knowing, maybe.
Or not knowing, connected by the pause itself.
And then the choir example, that feels broader, bringing the audience right in.
Yeah, think about that specific moment. Right after the final chord of a powerful piece fades away in a concert hall.
And nobody claps immediately. That hush.
That communal hush. That is the vanishing of sound that, according to the source, opens us to awe.
They call that pause a doorway to the sacred.
Yes. The collective choice to just hold the silence, to not break the spell. It validates the music that just happened. It lets it hang in the air.
That sounds beautiful. And maybe a bit idealistic.
How so?
Well, let's be pragmatic. When a big audience does that, especially in, say, a classical concert, is that always genuine shared awe? Or is some of it just conditioned politeness, knowing you're supposed to wait?
That's a really fair question. Does the source differentiate between, like, a forced silence?
Yeah, like a kid told to sit quietly in the corner.
Versus an authentic, chosen, maybe vulnerable silence.
Sure.
Well, remember the source's roots, radical kindness. They definitely imply authenticity. They focus on the intentionality of the pause.
Okay.
So they would likely differentiate silence born of fear or oppression from the conscious choice to create space.
So in the concert hall, choosing not to clap immediately
is framed as an act of consideration, a shared respect for the sound's lingering effect. It's like the invisible hand that cups each note.
That's the so what then, isn't it?
I think so.
Silence validates the sound. It's the framework, the space, that makes every vibration actually matter.
Mm.
And if we apply that same idea to kindness, maybe pausing before reacting in a tense moment, that pause becomes an act of intentional grace. Creating space.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
The collective pause isn't an absence of interaction. It's interaction on a different frequency, a shared moment of deep processing.
Well, the big challenge the source throws out then is that we don't actually need a string quartet or a church choir to find this.
No, not at all.
We apparently encounter this music of silence all the time in daily life.
If we choose to notice, that's the key phrase.
Right. If we choose to notice.
And that's where it becomes really practical, really actionable for, you know, for you listening.
They list these tangible moments, things we experience all the time. They call them thresholds.
Thresholds, yeah. Everyday junctures where the silence is actually quite palpable if you tune in.
Moments we probably just rush through usually. Or don't even register as being significant.
Exactly. Like the hush just before dawn.
Yeah, when the world seems to lean forward, waiting. That's not just quiet, is it? It's an anticipatory stillness. You can feel it.
You really can. And then there are the very human moments they list.
Like
the stillness right after really deep, genuine laughter. You know that moment.
Oh, yeah. When joy settles into warmth.
Yeah.
That little pause before everyone moves on, but the feeling is still there.
It's still vibrating in the space between you.
Or those really intimate moments, like the pause in a conversation after someone says something really tender or vulnerable.
That moment of just letting it land, not immediately jumping in with a fix or a response, just holding the space for it.
Or even, as they say, the breath right before a kiss.
Yeah. These aren't just blank spots on our timeline.
They're thresholds.
Actual thresholds. And the source argues that life's deepest truths often arrive not in clamor, but in quiet.
They're like the seams in the fabric of our lives, places where the potential for depth is highest.
Beautifully put, the seams.
And it's amazing how this idea, you know, it's not totally unique to this source. It connects to so many traditions.
That's true. They mention the sacred pause across different belief systems.
Quakers sit in silence.
Monks take vows of it, mystics actively seek it out. It's this universal recognition, really.
That the loudest truths often aren't loud at all.
Exactly, that the holy, the profound, the deeply meaningful.
Yeah.
It's often found in what is not said, not sung, not struck.
It's acknowledging that space, that silence, is fundamental to human experience, whether you see that space as religious or just purely experiential.
Right.
So, what does this all mean as we wrap up this deep dive? Where does this leave us?
Well,
we started with music, didn't we? But the conclusion the source draws seems to apply directly to what they call the music of being.
Our own lives.
Our own lives. And the argument is that our lives aren't meant to be this endless stream of constant doing.
No. Instead, our lives are patterned with rests, naturally.
Patterned with rests, like music?
Think about the necessary quiet periods we already have built in. Sleep. Reflection, the time it takes to process grief, even just waiting for the next thing.
We tend to see those as interruptions, don't we? Or wastes of time.
Or failures, even. But the source argues we're not diminished by these pauses. They are essential. They're the architectural elements.
The things that give our actions, our notes, their shape and weight.
We are shaped by the pauses, not held back by them.
And that discussion in the source about sacred play and silence.
Yeah.
It offers a really potent final thought for you, the listener, to take away.
Mm-hmm. It emphasizes that silence is not an ending, only a breath before the next note.
It's just a transition, not a full stop.
Exactly. Which leads to a final question, really, something to reflect on.
Okay.
If you truly internalize that idea that your periods of rest, whatever form they take, sleep, waiting, grieving, just pausing.
If you saw them not as absences, not as failures of productivity,
but as necessary architectural elements, essential parts of the whole composition.
How would that recognition change the way you define progress or meaning in your own life?
How would it change the music you're making?
Thanks for going on this little adventure with me today.
Anytime.
And listener, keep sprinkling that fairy dust, all right? We'll see you next time.